Welcome to your weekly English radio magazine on CJMQ 88.9 FM in Sherbrooke and CIDI 99.1 FM in the Lake Brome area. It's the Friday Drive, news commentary, 30-30 sports, arts and culture, and the interview of the week. Local events and issues for townshippers from townshippers. The Friday Drive starts right now with your host, Daniel Coulomb. 30-30 Sports on the Friday Drive.
He is back, and so am I. It's John Edwards right now, sports on the Friday Drive. I think of U.S. Thanksgiving weekend. I think Pat Summerall and John Madden. And John Edwards, too, to a certain extent.
Well, I think of Turducken, yes. Thanks to John Madden.
Okay, all right. Lots of stuff to talk about. Let's start with the Bishop Skaters football return to the RSEQ in 2026. You told me last week it's the worst-kept secret in the world.
Yeah, there'd been chatter for most of the season that this year would be Bishop's last in the AUS, and it finally came out. There was an article on Bulletin Sportif, Phil Mallow's website. He talked about it, and Bishop's didn't really deny it. It sort of got louder as the weeks went on. It was made official earlier this week on Monday that Bishop's would indeed be leaving the AUS and returning to the RSEQ next year. Money-motivated decision in the fact it's gotten more expensive for Bishop's to fly east. You know, that cost isn't going down. It's gotten more expensive for the other teams to come out to Quebec. When Bishop's hosted two playoff games last year, I think they found it particularly difficult.
But John, that's fine. I get that part. But didn't they switch over to the east in the first place because they were just not competitive in the RSEQ?
You know, I think in the end, in this case, if you read between the lines, it was that it's the AUS that didn't want to come to Bishop's anymore.
Oh, I see.
So, okay. So when Bishop's went over it, it worked for both leagues because, you know, it helped the AUS sort of diversify its schedule. So you're not playing teams three times a year. You know, they're not going to get hammered by Laval and Interlock games, or which was the style at the time. But I think as it's gone on, they've found that the costs have gotten too much to do a bus trip to Quebec every year. And on the Bishop side, I think the cost of the plane has gone up enough that it's a situation where, given the money trouble that every university program is in, that money could go somewhere else.
All right. Let me read out loud what John Edwards wrote to me this week. Fighting for third or fourth and the chance to get a payday by going to Laval to get hammered in a semi.
Yeah. I mean, this is still a league. The RSEQ Football League is still a league where there are two teams and everybody else. You know, so I mean, the best that any other team in that league can do is third. And the way the RSEQ works for playoff games is it's a gate split. So if you go up to Laval, they draw a bunch of fans and they have to split a bunch of that money with you. So that's, you know, it's the only pay game that exists in Canadian university football. There's a lot in the States. That's the only one that exists in Canada.
Well, you're not overselling that season ticket to me, I'll tell you. Hey, John, the other thing I wanted to talk to you about is McGill University's cutting back on 25 sports teams. Could this happen at Bishop's and every other university in the country?
Well, I think it's a sign that times are getting tougher at universities, McGill especially. The government is not exactly funding English schools lavishly. This was a decision by McGill motivated by money and a feeling the need to cut back. Most of the sports that they've cut were club level sports, so I'm kind of interested in the amount of those that were cut because I can't imagine that it costs a lot of money to run lager sports or figure skating. But, you know, at the varsity level, the interesting ones, they cut their track and field team, which has been around for 125 years, and they cut women's rugby without cutting men's rugby. So that's not a good look. We've seen this week three universities in this country make big decisions motivated by money. Bishop's coming back to the RSEQ in football. McGill cutting it sports. And Simon Fraser is coming back to U Sports, or is applying to come back to U Sports, because a consultant told them it would save them $1 million a year.
Very nice for high-profile sports like football and men's hockey. As a student, I want an array of sports offered to me. More than that, no?
Yeah, I would. Athletic departments get reduced to just football and basketball. That's not a good situation. That sort of, you know, with McGill, the recent cuts are particularly sad, because McGill, along with Queens, Western, and Toronto, used to be one of the ones that was offering closest to the Ivy League model as many opportunities as possible, you know, to promote well-rounded students. And now, after this round of cuts, they're basically like Concordia without wrestling.
All right. Thank you so much for putting a little light on all of this. We talk at 5:30.
Yep, we'll see you then.
Of course there's music, but we also talk about a lot of issues that matter to you. You're listening to The Friday Drive on CJMQ 88.9 FM and CIDI 99.1 FM.
You and me never see us fall apart. This kind of love, I swear it's made for both of us. When I fall asleep, wanna wake up next to you, give you all of me. I'm addicted to the rush. I wanna touch that body, I wanna kiss that body, I wanna hold that, never let go of nothing without your body. I wanna touch that body, I wanna kiss that body, I wanna hold that, never let go of nothing without your body. And if these walls could talk, they'd say I'm screaming about you, baby. They make believe we're not so crazy. It's you and me forever, baby. Me and you, I never wanna let you go. Can you feel it? My heart beats so intentional. When I fall asleep, wanna wake up next to you, give you all of me. I'm addicted to the rush. I wanna touch that body, kiss that body, I wanna hold that, never let go of nothing without your body. I wanna touch that body, I wanna kiss that body, I wanna hold that, never let go of nothing without your body. And if these walls could talk,
a weekly news review on The Friday Drive.
The weekly news review. Townships born and raised Robert McPherson, an experienced journalist and editor who's worked extensively with Agence France-Presse. He has served as a foreign correspondent in various locations, including Hong Kong, Beijing, Paris, Sarajevo, Brussels, and London. Originally from Magog, not North Hatley, live from London, England, the hotbed of the Eastern Townships for this segment, I'll tell you. It's good to have you. Thank you so much for being here again.
It's a pleasure.
How have you been doing?
Pretty good. Very gray and bleak as usual in London as it is this time of year. Well, actually, wildly vacillating between bright, sunny, cloudless days one day and dark clouds the next one.
Man, it sounds like the townships to me. Robert, a lot of people have been asking me, are you going to be talking about Mike McDevitt in the segment? And of course we have to. He passed away this past week. This is strange for me to talk about my friend here in the past. Mike was part of this segment for over 5 years. And I remember reaching out to him with an idea of his commenting the news every week. And that was back in 2020. And he said yes at the time because, as he told me repeatedly, he thought this show would last about a month. So Mike, as you know, had a background as a teacher, had worked at the Record under Charles Berry. You did as well, did you not?
He came many years after I did. I was at the Record 75, 76, 77. Definitely, he was, I think, one of the highlights of that period when the Record under Charlie Burry was really a remarkable product. And just looking, I didn't know Mike personally myself. I certainly knew his voice, and no more distinctive a radio voice than Mike when he came on every week, booming his very sharply opinionated thoughts of the current affairs in the townships, Quebec, Canada, beyond. I was very impressed by his obituary, which has appeared this week. I didn't know that he had this background teaching history and political science at Champlain, or substitute teaching at Galt or Richmond Regional. I think anybody who dared to substitute teach at a high school is already someone of remarkable talents, knowing how students react to substitute teachers when they walk through the room.
Mike would have been the first one to say he didn't have that FM radio voice. You would get in touch with me often and say, I listened to Mike again this week. You liked what he had to say.
Yes, those voices just stood out, and he was a true Eastern Townships original. Speaking now in this lot that really belonged to him, I feel I have very big shoes to fill.
He took genuine pleasure, you know, in having people come up to him and say they liked the segment. There was a great piece by Sharon McCulley on Mike and Wednesday's Record. See if you can get to that. And there's a celebration tomorrow at the Lion in Lennoxville, a celebration of life. And again, deepest condolences to his family and friends.
Indeed.
By the way, I recorded an interview in late July with Mike, and I'm going to run that next week, the last interview with Mike McDevitt. Mark Carney was voted in to deal with Mr. Trump and get Canada to do business with other countries. Of course, Mark Carney was based in the UK for a long time. How is he viewed in your part of the world post-election, him now being Canadian Prime Minister?
I would say, well, first of all, Mark Carney is in the UK a known quantity. I should say in general that the British don't seem to give much attention to Canada to begin with. Probably give more attention to even the slightest affairs happening in Australia. But Mark Carney is different. Not only did he attend university at Oxford, but he was also the first non-British governor of the Bank of England for over 5 years. He was particularly outspoken. Usually the Bank of England governor is supposed to be extremely discreet, but he was someone who did have opinions on Scottish independence, for instance, and he was clearly not enthusiastic about Brexit. The UK leaving the European Union even warned it might lead to a recession. Well, arguable whether it led to a recession, but certainly the British economy is nowhere as energetic as it would have been had it stayed in the EU. I think it's tough from that point of view. He doesn't need much introduction to people in the UK. And I think from a geopolitical point of view, he's probably regarded as a solid operator and as somebody who is probably sees the world as a bigger place than just the U.S. and trying to turn Canadian minds to the possibilities that exist outside of North America, particularly from an export point of view.
But he's not as much fun as Justin Trudeau, who's going out with Katy Perry. I just thought I'd add that.
Trudeau was, the glamour boy. And I think when Trudeau came in during Donald Trump's first administration, Justin Trudeau a bit went out of his way. I think we talked about this before in an earlier interview. He kind of went out of his way as being the anti-Trump. Of course, when Trump gets reelected, Trudeau is very much down in the dumps. And Donald Trump, who thinks in terms of winners and losers, really fancied kicking Justin Trudeau while was down, and it was probably just as well that Mark Carney came on stage to take his place and went to the White House to describe Donald Trump as a transformative president, which is a wonderful way of describing Trump. You can use that word transformative in so many different ways.
Ukraine now. All week, there's been some optimism in the press and from the U.S. negotiating team that a deal could be reached to put an end to the war. There's a fly in the ointment, Robert. Having Vladimir Putin sign off and agree to terms is nothing that's done yet. And Trump is on the Russian side one week and on Zelensky's side the other. What do you see happening?
Let's see. We have American Thanksgiving. Trump gave Zelensky and the Ukrainians until Thanksgiving to give their response to this deal that Trump's special envoy for everything, Steve Witkoff, came back from Moscow with. What Witkoff came back with was almost a perfect shopping list of everything that Vladimir Putin wants. Predictably, it was not welcomed enthusiastically either by Zelensky or by the Europeans, for that matter. Now we've had further negotiations between the Ukrainians and the Americans. If Trump had any hope of being able to claim victory on a deal this weekend, I don't think that's going to happen. There's this kind of interesting twist that's come up again about Steve Witkoff, who has no diplomatic experience, no geopolitical experience. He seems to have the job only because he's a good buddy of Donald Trump from his real estate days. But we learned this week, allegedly, that Steve Witkoff, while negotiating for the U.S., and one would have hoped on behalf of Ukraine and Western NATO interests, that Steve Witkoff was also giving tips to the Russians on how to butter up Donald Trump. A very kind of strange way of doing things, of telling the Russians, well, here's what you got to do to get my boss to agree to what your boss wants. It just adds to all the intrigue and skullduggery that is just dragging this war further and further, when really the solution for the war to end is simply for Russia to turn around, go back to the original borders and get out of Crimea. That would be the simple solution. But I wonder if Donald Trump and his minions they just want to have a deal to be able to go outside and announce, we have a deal, which may not necessarily be the deal that works best in Ukrainian interests or European interests or even Russian interests, for that matter, perhaps.
Oh, Donald and his deals. Hey, your wife, Grace, is from Hong Kong. Those towers up in flame this week. What a disaster. Mm.
And things like this really hit home in Hong Kong. Sort of one of those seminal moments in Hong Kong history was in 1953, when there was a vast fire that swept through a shantytown in Shep Kip May in the New Territories, which left tens of thousands homeless. Very, very few fatalities due to the fact that it was, after all, shantytown, and people just had to run out the door. They weren't living in high rises. But that was an event that is seared deeply, pardon the pun, seared deeply into the history of Hong Kong, popular history of Hong Kong. Certainly many people are thinking of that again. In this case, we've got high-rise fire of very spectacular proportions and probably the highest death fatality numbers of anything like this, certainly since the Second World War. Not unusual. It seems these buildings were under renovation and therefore covered with bamboo scaffolding, which is the scaffolding of reference in Hong Kong. Not necessarily too flammable in itself. Very strong material, but also very high moisture content, so it doesn't burn that easily. What does burn easily is if you put flammable fabric on the side of the scaffolding, is intended to prevent small pieces of debris from falling down onto the street, for instance. That is supposed to be non-flammable material. The suspicion is that contractors were trying to cut corners, therefore we're using a flammable material, which caused the flames to spread very quickly. That, combined with the apparent use of styrofoam insulation around the windows of the buildings that were being renovated, that of course is highly flammable as well. It's its own version of planes crashing into the World Trade Center in its way. Very terrifying. I remember seeing one reference about somebody phoning their father in one of the buildings to tell them that the building was on fire, and the father didn't even know at the time that the building was going up in flames. Such are the dangers of living in a multiple occupancy high-rise apartment building.
Oh, you wanted to say a couple of words about Jimmy Cliff's passing this week as well.
You can get it if you really want it, as the this week's theme song. Yeah, Jimmy Cliff, one of the reggae greats right up there with Bob Marley, and also his films, The Harder They Come. Both the film and the soundtrack did so much to make reggae the global sound that it remains today.
From London, England, Magog's own Robert McPherson. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you next week. Have a good weekend.
My pleasure. Let's do it again.
If you have any comments or questions regarding what you hear on today's show, email us at cjmqnews@yahoo.ca.
Yeah. I stare at my reflection in the mirror. Why am I doing this to myself? Losing my mind on a tiny error. I nearly left the real me on the shelf. No, no, no. To do to fit the mold, yeah. The more I try, the less it's working.
Time for your weekly information from the Lake Brome, Missisquoi area on the Friday Drive.
CIDI Station Manager Tony Mason.
Konnichiwa, Daniel-san. Welcome back. We missed you.
Oh, boy. I like that. Very nice. Tony reports from the Brome, Missisquoi region with stories for you from this week. And, sir, the CIDI team is keeping busy with getting ready for the holidays.
Also, we have new members of the team. Thanks to a grant from the Local Journalism Initiative and the Government of Canada, we've been able to hire Holly Bailey and Jim Ferrier as our new journalists. So far, they've delivered some great interviews, and they're both working hard to keep Brome-Missisquoi informed. Holly just completed a two-part in-depth interview with the world-renowned author, biochemist, and botanist, Diana Beresford Kroger, and part two will air tonight, right after the Friday Drive. Jim Ferrier is working on several new environmental stories right now concerning the Mount Echo Conservation Associations, also known as MECCAs, AGM, which takes place this coming weekend, the Brome Lake Land Foundation, an intriguing piece about what's going on with Mount Pinnacle.
And Tony, to start the holiday celebrations, the CIDI team will once again be taking part in the Knowlton Lions Club Santa Claus Parade. That's Saturday, December 6th.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Last year, I think we took third place, which was fun. The parade this year begins at 1 p.m. Something different this year. We're going to be teaming up with our good friends from the Brome Lake Museum, Pettis Memorial Library, and Teat Lac Brome. So together, the whole gang will be walking the parade route, and we will be constructing and afloat together and riding it in the parade for the first time. Also coming up shortly on December 13th is Knowlton's annual Midnight Madness. CIDI will be taking part in the village's great annual Christmas market. This year, visitors can explore local boutiques, enjoy hot chocolate, soup and mulled wine, seasonal music, and just stroll around Knowlton and soak up the ambience. The event will be starting at 5 p.m. with stores open until midnight. CIDI listeners can stop by at our new offices this year on the corner of Victoria and Lakeside. Hear some live music, warm up by a fire, and help support CIDI by buying a membership and participating in our gift raffle.
Tony Mason, I celebrate your passion, your presence, and everything you do. It's amazing what CIDI is up to.
Well, we're growing. We're growing, Daniel. And with the support of our listeners, we've got some great things planned in the future.
All right. Listen to CIDI on 99.1 FM and check the website, CIDI991.com. Tony Mason, have a good weekend. We speak next week.
Thank you.
Humphrey coming up right after 5 o'clock with People, Places, and Things to Do in the Eastern Townships. 5:10 interview of the week. Journalist William Crooks talks to us about all the changes on the municipal front over the past few weeks. Right here on the Friday Drive at CIDI 99.1 FM and CJMQ 88.9 FM.